Please come with me to Proverbs chapter 1. We were in Proverbs last week, and we kicked off this book. And here's a book to make you wise, whoever you are. We look to that, whoever you are, however wise you are, however foolish you are, this is a book to make you wise. And we ask the question, what is wisdom? Well, wisdom is being able to see things as they really are. You see into the very heart of things. It's insight, it's discernment, it's wisdom. Some people describe it as practical holiness, godly living. And of course, where is wisdom to be found? Well, we're told the fear of the Lord, verse 7, is the beginning of knowledge. And then chapter 9, we're told, verse 10, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. So you won't find wisdom outside the Lord. And you won't even begin at the beginning until you learn to fear the Lord. And we ask the question, what is the fear of the Lord? I'm not going to go through all that we said, but it's very clear. It's not a sort of cringing, servile fear. I'm afraid of being punished, and I'm terrified of consequences. It is a conscious living in the presence of the deepest reality of all. That's the living God. So I live with my face towards God. I cultivate the unseen presence. I'm in a conversation. There are two of us, it seems. There's me and the other person. But actually, I'm more aware of the third person in that conversation, the Lord himself. He's more real to me than the person I'm talking to. I'm cultivating the unseen presence. It's a relationship of humility, of trust, obedience. And I love him first and best and always. And I'm afraid, genuinely afraid, to go away from him and to go my own way. It means the Lord I cannot see is more real to me than the world I can see. And in that sense, I'm living in the light of reality. He's the deepest reality of all. I'm living in the light of the deepest reality of all. I'm living in the real world, you might say. And since Jesus is the wisest human being of all, and everything that's said in Proverbs about the wise man is gloriously, wonderfully true of Jesus. And since we're told, Isaiah chapter 11, that he feared the Lord, his delight shall be in the fear of the Lord. That being so, this is a book, because it's wisdom, and it's wisdom in the fear of the Lord. This is a book to make me like the Lord Jesus Christ, which is thrilling then, isn't it? It's all sort of an Old Testament, almost a bit of wisdom in this book. Yeah, it's a wisdom book. Actually, everything I'm learning about it is going to make me like Christ. There are things which says that's not like Christ, so walk away from it. There are things to say that is like Jesus, walk towards it. It's a book to make me like the Lord Jesus Christ. So that's all really what verses 1 to 7. I'm not going to read verses 1 to 7 again. So if you missed last week, it's on. We recorded it, so you can catch up with it. But let's look now at verses 8 to 19. We'll start there. So here's Solomon, he's speaking. Hear, my son, your father's instruction, and forsake not your mother's teaching, for they are a graceful garland for your head and pendants for your neck. My son, if sinners entice you, do not consent. If they say, come with us, let us lie in wait for blood, let us ambush the innocent without reason. Like shale, let us swallow them alive, and whole like those who go down to the pit. We shall find all precious goods, we shall fill our houses with plunder. Throw in your lot among us, we will have one purse. My son, do not walk in the way with them. Hold back your foot from their paths, for their feet run to evil, and they make haste to shed blood. For in vain is a net spread in the sight of any bird. But these men lie in wait for their own blood. They set an ambush for their own lives. Such are the ways of everyone who is greedy for unjust gain. It takes away the life of its possessors. Now, when I read Proverbs, or when I have read Proverbs, and I've read verses 1 to 7, it's all this grand about wisdom and so on, and learning, and the fear of the Lord and so on. When I come then to verse 8 and onwards, sometimes I've found that a bit of a letdown. This grand opening. And then Solomon says, right, now my son, I'm going to speak to you. But the scenario he paints is a scenario that few of us, perhaps, at the surface level will ever face. Here's an invitation to go and shed innocent blood to get rich quick. That's what the invitation is. You might think, well, that's kind of a bit extreme. Where's that going? Why does Solomon begin like this? Now, yesterday I was walking in Marble Hill. I was going for a walk along the river, and I went through Marble Hill, and I took my shirt off. I took everything off. Why? Sensible, serious question. It wasn't to show off my manly physique. Why did I suddenly strip my shirt off? It wasn't a senior moment. No, I don't think it was anyway. It was a wasp, that's right. A wasp. I didn't look too closely, but I thought a wasp went down inside. So I wasn't going to put my hand down and try and find a wasp. The easy thing to do was just to take everything off. So I was stripped to the waist, and I was shaking everything out and whatever, and I got a funny look from somebody. But if you understand the reason why I took off my shirt and was there bare-chested in Marble Hill in the afternoon, because a shirt went down my wasp, a wasp went down my shirt. Okay, sometimes an extreme point, or sometimes an extreme situation makes a point quickly, doesn't it? It gets our attention. Wakes us up. He's speaking to his son. He wants to wake him up, wake up, wake up. So he gives him what looks like an extreme situation, but actually buried in it, not actually buried in it, in it all, is this wonderful counsel. So it's a sort of wake up. Come on, wake up, wake up. Because actually the other path, away from wisdom, is far more shocking than perhaps you realise. So I'll give you an extreme scenario, he says. But actually, that is just a foolish decision. That's what folly looks like. That's folly in full flowering. Do you want to go down a full flower path that leads to there? No, but of course not. Well, okay, now listen to what I've got to say, he says. So it's a kind of wake up. This is what he says, verse 8. Hear, my son, your father's instruction, and forsake not your mother's teaching. So it's a godly home. Mum and dad are both involved in the teaching of the son. Father's instruction, mother's teaching. Hear the father's instruction. Don't forsake your mother's teaching. So it's a message of hear, and then hold on to what you hear. Don't let it go. Now, when people, some of you have done marriage preparation stuff with me, and there's a big thing I always emphasise early on when we look at Psalm 128. What do I emphasise? What do husband and wife always do right from the beginning? What must they always do? Psalm 128. They must always sit down and
pray.
Pray, yes, but I don't say that. Eat. That's right. I always say guard the meal table. It's absolutely fundamental. So that you begin married life by sitting down and eating together as much as that's possible. Sometimes it's not possible every day of the week, but as much as you can do it, sit down and eat together. Because if the Lord then blesses with children, they will come into a situation where there's a table, there's a family culture, they're sitting down, we're eating together, and the four-year-old who's talking to you and asking questions and decanting what they did today will still be talking when they're 14. And still talking beyond, even if sometimes they don't always want to talk. It's the place, isn't it, where often we learn instruction, a father's instruction and a mother's teaching. I mean, it takes place everywhere. But it's very, very important to keep the family meal time, because that's often where these things are addressed. And if you take wisdom's teaching to heart, says Solomon, it will beautify you. It will bring you honour. It will set you apart. For they are a graceful garland for your head, be like a crown, and pendants. You know, people wear chains of office, don't they? Or medals, or whatever it is, to mark them out. It'll be a pendant for your neck. It'll beautify you. It'll bring you honour. Now, of course, many people don't grow up in homes, godly homes, where they're not going to hear teaching of mother and father. But we have a Heavenly Father's teaching in the Bible, and that's why the New Testament speaks so much of the church being a family. It is the place where there are mums and dads, And there's teaching, and older Christians taking younger Christians under their wing and instructing them and helping them and living out the wise life, being a beautiful example. So verses 8 and 9 apply to us all, not just to the person growing up in a Christian home. And then he goes on to talk about what his son must beware of. And it's the enticement to go the other way. My son, if sinners entice you, do not consent. Okay, that's fair enough, isn't it? But of course, they're persuasive. Verse 11. If they say, come with us, let us lie in wait for blood, let us ambush the innocent without reason. It's come with us, isn't it? It's very attractive. Come with us, be part of the group, belong. And Solomon is saying, if you become part of the group, if you go along with others, actually you'll go much further than ever you would go on your own. Somehow being part of a gang, part of a group, it brings the worst out in us. And it pushes us to go so much further than we would go on our own. So Augustine, in his Confessions, he's talking to the Lord throughout, but he's talking about he and his friends went and stole pears. And this is how he talks about it. He's talking to the Lord. He says, yet had I been alone, I would not have done it. I remember my state of mind to be thus at the time. Alone, I would never have done it. Therefore, my love in the act was to be associated with the gang in whose company I did it. And then a bit further down. But my pleasure was not in the pears he stole. It was in the crime itself, done in association with a sinful group. It goes on a bit further. But alone, I wouldn't have done it. Could not conceivably have done it by myself. See before you, my God, the living memory of my soul. Alone, I would not have committed that crime in which my pleasure lay not in what I was stealing, but in the act of theft. Had I been alone, it would have given me absolutely no pleasure, nor would I have committed it. Friendship can be a dangerous enemy, a seduction of the mind lying beyond the reach of investigation. Out of a game and a jest came an avid desire to do injury and an appetite to inflict loss on someone else without any motive on my own part of personal gain and no pleasure in settling a score. As soon as the words are spoken, let us go and do it, one is ashamed not to be shameless. In other words, when you're part of a group, you egg each other on, don't you? Who can be the most daring? Who can go and you push each other on? You each go further and further and further. And there's this wonderful wisdom, isn't there, here in Solomon. He's saying, well, don't go along with them. When they start saying to you, come with us, don't listen. And just a bit before that, actually, Augustine says this, which is quite interesting, talking about listening to what your mother's saying, mother's teaching. His mother was a Christian, Monica was a Christian. And she warns him, and he says, these warnings seem to me womanish advice, which I could have blushed to take the least notice of. I'm not going to listen to my mother. But they were your warnings, talking now to the Lord, and I didn't realize it. I believed you were silent, and that it was only she who was speaking when you were speaking to me through her. So if you're growing up in a Christian home, you might think, well, that's my dad, that's my mum. But very often what God is speaking through them, God is talking to you through your mum and dad. So take that to heart. Don't say, well, that's just them, I don't know what they're going to say. So when we become part of a group, we egg each other on. So these people are saying, join the gang, come with us. And they say, verse 12, like Sheol, let us swallow them alive. Okay, this, like the grave, swallow them alive. And whole, like those who go down to the pit. What they're saying is that we'll get away with it. Because there won't be any witnesses. When we do the crime, we'll do it in such a way as there'll be no one to nail us and to point the finger at us. And then verse 13, think of the gain. We shall find all precious goods. We shall fill our houses with plunder. We'll get rich quick. And here's the peer pressure coming in again. Verse 14, throw in your lot among us, and we will all have one purse. I don't want to be left out. I don't want to be thought, I'm just going on what my mum and dad say. The peer pressure to be pulled in. And so Solomon says, my son, do not walk in the way with them. Hold back your foot from their paths, for their feet run. They're in a hurry to do evil, and they make haste to shed blood. They can't wait to do it. But where does it all lead? Verse 17, for in vain is a net spread in the sight of any bird. Okay, if you're going to try and catch a bird, you don't put the trap where the bird can see it, because the bird's not going to be caught, is it? And you might say, look, any fool knows that. But that's the point. Any fool does know that. You don't lay a trap to catch a bird in a way that the trap can be seen. But says Solomon, there's a greater folly. These people are bigger fools than that. Because actually what they're doing is laying an ambush, laying a trap for themselves. Verse 18, but these men lie in wait for their own blood. They set an ambush for their own lives. Such are the ways of everyone who is greedy for unjust gain. It takes away the life of its possessors. They destroy themselves. They run down the path of folly and they destroy themselves. You could sum it up almost with Jesus' words, couldn't you? What does it profit a man if he gains the whole world? All they're thinking about is gain, gain, gain. And yet loses his own soul. So the wise, they listen and they hold fast to wise teaching. That marks them out. They know themselves. That's part of wisdom. They know what they are like. Look at the way Solomon puts it. He says in verse 15, my son, do not walk in the way with them. Hold back your foot from their paths. Because they know that if I take the first step, then the first step leads to the second step, which leads to the third step. And I'm walking, and then soon I'm running in that path. They say, we drink, don't they? You know, the man takes the first drink, and the first drink takes the second drink, and then the second drink takes the man as he takes the third drink. He would have goes into the pub and says, well, I just have one pint of beer, and the one takes the two, takes the three, and so on goes on. It's like that, isn't it? It's knowing myself. It's knowing that I have a tinder dry heart. And one spark will set it ablaze. I'm very, very vulnerable. I don't know the seed of every known sin is in my heart. I am capable of anything. Anything. I'm capable of murder, running off with someone's wife, deceit, deception, lies, cruelty, idolatry. It's all inside me. So the wise person says, I know what I'm like. I dare even take that first step. Because however much I might promise myself I'll just take the first step, I may end up going the whole way. And of course, if you look at the way these people are speaking, it's very exciting, isn't it? You know, there's a kind of pace about it. It's exciting. There's an energy in what they're saying. You can feel the energy. And just listening to what your mum and dad says, listening to the teaching sounds a bit dull, a bit boring, a bit ordinary, doesn't it? This is much more exciting. But don't take the first step. Know yourself. But the bottom line in all of this is those who go down this path is that they don't fear the Lord. Whereas those who refuse to go down that path is they do fear the Lord. And therefore they're not afraid to be different. If they fear him, then they're not going to be afraid of what other people might say or think. They won't follow the crowd. The fear of the Lord is a great buttress against peer pressure. Because even if I displease everybody else, but I please the Lord, fantastic. That's all I need to do. Only one person to please, and that's the Lord. So, you know, I can displease everyone, and they can all be at me, but if I'm pleasing the Lord, that's all that matters. That's all that matters. So it's very liberating, but also there's a warning in it. So that's how Solomon begins. Okay, look now at verses 20 to to 33. We won't read it first, we'll just go through it. We've just had a wasp shoved down our shirt, it's woken us up. We realise if you go down the path of folly, you can end up not only involved in bloodshed and murder, but actually you'll end up destroying yourself. And you'll be so mad, so foolish, that actually you set a trap for you yourself to fall into. Who ever heard of such a thing? But that's where folly leads. So don't even take the first step. It'll ruin you. Okay? So, we now hear the call of wisdom. And wisdom is personified as a woman. It's interesting. Now, if these sinners are whispering, wisdom calls. If sinners whisper in secret, saying, "Come on, come with us," they entice you. It's all a bit secret. It's all a bit, you know, quiet. But sort of behind the bicycle sheds. She goes public. Verse 20. Wisdom cries aloud in the street. In the markets, she raises her voice. At the head of the noisy streets, she cries out. At the entrance of the city gates, she speaks. So she goes public. She's within earshot of everyone. However noisy the streets are, you can still hear her voice above all the other voices. So she can be heard. What does she say? Verse 22. How long, O simple ones, will you love being simple? How long will scoffers delight in their scoffing, and fools hate knowledge? If you turn at my reproof, behold, I will pour out my spirit to you. I will make my words known to you. So what she's saying, it's an invitation to the passing world, whoever you are, however foolish you might be, come to me and you will be wise. I'll make you wise. So don't keep loving simplicity and don't scoff at what I have to say. Turn, come this way, come to me and I'll teach you. I'll make my words known to you. There's a wonderful invitation. Wisdom's not the preserve of a handful. There's not in the Bible an Oxford and Cambridge and only a select few get there. The invitation is to everyone, however old you are, young you are, however, whatever your upbringing, background, whatever you are, wisdom is calling to you. It's a lovely invitation. Okay, she says here, how long, O simple ones, will you love being simple? Why does she call people simple?
Because we are.
Okay, that's true, yeah, we are. But what does it mean, being simple?
Not wise.
Not wise, that's true. Yeah, I got it. Yeah, that's right, we're not wise.
Not think very deeply.
That's right, we don't think very deeply about things.
Childlike.
Childlike, yeah.
Can't see the big picture.
Can't see the big picture. Yeah, they're all correct answers, aren't they? I mean, we're just stupid. We just don't get it. You're simple. You just don't get it, do you? You sit down and say, look, 1 + 1 = 2. And they say, just run butt past me again. You say, are you that simple? Well, in spiritual terms, that's what it is. You know, 1 and 1 = 2 in spiritual terms, but they don't get it. And actually, the reason they don't get it is they don't want to get it. Left to ourselves, we love our ignorance. We love our fallenness. We love rolling in the dung. I don't want to know. Don't tell me. Don't talk to me about it. We don't want to be wise. Anyone heard of the 27 Club?
No.
No? Anyone heard of the 27 Club? Oh,
yeah. The singers in 27.
Yeah, that's right. Go on. Yeah, go on. Say it out loud, Israel.
Like Amy Winehouse and all these people.
That's right. It's a sort of a lot of rock singers and whatever died at the age of 27. So it became a sort of 27 Club. And when, you know, the next one died at the age of 27, it's like, oh, there's another one that's died at 27. It's a sort of an unlucky number if you're a rock star. There's no real statistical background to it, but it's a kind of, in the ether and so on, it's kind of, well, obviously none of you have heard about it, so if you went through the list of rock stars who died at the age of 27, they died because of substance abuse, or suicide, or just reckless lifestyles. Okay, so they crashed a car, or they drowned, or whatever it might be. They live self-destructive lifestyles. Some of these you know, if you're under the age probably about 60, not, some of these won't mean anything to you. Brian Jones of the Rolling Stones, Jimi Hendrix, Janis Joplin, Jim Morrison of the Doors, Kurt Cobain, Amy Winehouse. There are various rappers in recent days. I won't say what their names are, but they've died at the age of 27. Now, what's the point? These people live lives of excess. So they live for money, they live for fame, they live for pleasure. They set themselves on a self-destructive trajectory. And the fact is, having set themselves on a self-destructive trajectory, they, because they have money and fame, they were able to arrive at their destination faster than most other people do. So they kill themselves at the age of 27, okay? Because they have more money than, more fame, more opportunities. They got there faster and killed themselves. Okay, 27 Club. People see that trajectory, but they don't think that's a bad trajectory. I shouldn't be following that path. People still say, if only I had the chance to get more money. If only I had the chance to be famous. If only I had the chance to have more opportunities for pleasure and the things that I want to do. In other words, people are saying, if I had more opportunity to have the same self-destructive behaviour. They don't put one and one together. Equally, you have some, you know, that's all 27 Club. People might know friends, neighbours, colleagues who make certain decisions which are foolish decisions in spiritual terms. Okay? Foolish decisions. A man might run off with someone else's wife, or a wife run off with someone else's husband, something like that. It's a spiritually foolish decision. They then witness and see the, if I can put it like this, the exquisite misery that those people are in. That actually they've built their house next to hell. But they don't say, well, that's a terrible thing, I therefore must avoid those things. They can't see the one in one in spiritual terms equals two. They repeat the same folly. That's the sense of it here. Simple ones. People just do not get it. They just don't get it. They love being simple. How long? Oh, simple ones, will you love being simple? How long will scoffers delight in their scoffing? How long are you going to delight in telling wisdom where to go? Verse 22, and fools hate knowledge. Just don't talk to me, I don't want to know. Verse 23, if you turn at my reproof, but they refuse to turn. Behold, I'll pour out my spirit on you, to you, and I will make my words known to you. Because I have called, and you refuse to listen. Have stretched out my hand, and no one has heeded. You don't want wisdom. You just don't want to hear. You shut your ears. You won't even take wisdom's hand. Verse 25, because you have ignored all my counsel, and would have none of my reproof. You take offence at being challenged. You get upset when you're rebuked. We don't want wisdom's advice. Verse 29, because they hated knowledge. Verse 30, would have none of my counsel, and despised all my reproof. In other words, here are people who just sneer at wisdom, they snub wisdom, they don't want to know. I'm happy being simple, I'm happy in my ignorance, I'm happy carrying on as I've always carried on. Don't talk to me, and if you challenge me and rebuke me, you're going to hear from me, and I'm going my own way. Perhaps the heart of it really is verse 32, of people's reaction to wisdom. For the simple are killed by their turning away. And the complacency of fools destroys them. It's that word complacency, isn't it? Whatever wisdom warns, there's something that's self-destructive in us as sinners. Because when sinners are warned by wisdom, that self-destructive voice says, yeah, but it won't happen to me. It won't happen to me. It's complacency. The complacency of fools destroys them. Every fool says, and I say, it left to myself, I will always say, but I'm the exception, it won't happen to me. And ends up destroying me. So, Whatever wisdom warns, people say, well, it won't happen to me. People reject wisdom. And when they do, we find out what happens. Verse 24. Because I have called and you refuse to listen, have stretched out my hand and no one has heeded, because you have ignored all my counsel and would have none of my reproof, I also will laugh at your calamity. I will mock when terror strikes you. When terror strikes you like a storm and your calamity comes like a whirlwind, when distress and anguish come upon you. Solomon says, if you ignore wisdom's voice when she calls to you, then you will meet with calamity. The words are very strong, aren't they? You will meet with calamity, terror, distress, anguish, and it will come upon you suddenly. That's that. When terror strikes like a storm, like a whirlwind. And when that happens, what's wisdom's reaction? Verse 26. I also will laugh at your calamity. I will mock when terror strikes you. Is wisdom being vengeful? You know, here are people who ignored her, and terror and anguish takes hold of them. And when she sees terror and anguish take hold of them, she laughs and she mocks. I think Solomon's trying to say, is wisdom being vengeful? Well, I suppose the first thing to say is actually, of course, wisdom is not a real woman. She's being personified. So this is a scenario that's being painted for us. What's Solomon saying?
Like the knowledge comes back to you, you hear it, and it almost drives you insane because you didn't listen, and now you can see.
Yeah, that's right. That's exactly what Solomon is saying. It's a very powerful way of saying, isn't it, that if you ignore wisdom, wisdom's words will come back to haunt you. So don't ignore wisdom. Hear wisdom the first time round, because if you don't, you won't escape wisdom's voice. Wisdom's voice will come back to you, and it will haunt you. Wisdom will always be vindicated. And you'll be left thinking, if only I'd listened. But it'll be too late then. So you can see what Solomon is sowing into what he's saying. He's sowing in to people, sowing in the urgency of listening to wisdom's voice now. He's saying, look, if you don't listen to wisdom's voice now, you will one day listen to wisdom's voice. But that day will be too late. It'll be too late then. And you can see their reaction. Verse 28, then they will call upon me, but I will not answer. Then they will seek me diligently, but will not find me. Because they hated knowledge and did not choose the fear of the Lord. There you are, you see. And would have none of my counsel and despise my reproof. Therefore they shall eat the fruit of their way. They shall have the fill of their own devices. For the simple are killed by their turning away. And the complacency of fools destroys them. It's interesting the way it's put, isn't it, in verse 28. Then they will call upon me, but I will not answer. They will seek me diligently, or seek me early, but will not find me. So, when they heard wisdom's voice the first time, that was the last voice they wanted to hear. Don't talk to me, I don't want to hear you. It's the last voice, I don't want to hear any. But now, calamity's come. It's they're calling to wisdom. That's the first person they call to. So what he's saying is, don't, when you hear wisdom's voice, never ever ignore it, because one day it will come back to haunt you if you ignore it. Not only that, but it'll be the first thing you'll be thinking of. But you haven't listened. Is it too late? And again, this whole thing, it's saying, yes, it is too late. So never ever turn away from wisdom, because at the judgment, God will say, you destroyed yourself. I raise my voice. Well, the wisdom raised her voice, you heard, it was within earshot. But you wouldn't turn around, you wouldn't listen, you wouldn't take it to heart. And now it's all too late. And again, it comes down to these two things, isn't it? That when it comes to people hearing wisdom or not listening to wisdom, it all comes down to do I know myself? If I know myself, then I will listen to wisdom, because I know the dangers are in my heart. If I don't know myself, And before we're converted as sinners, we don't know ourselves, do we? We don't think we're that bad. We think we're okay. Sin blinds us to our own sinfulness. We don't see just how wicked we really are. So, we don't know ourselves. We don't know the madness that's in us. And left to ourselves, we love darkness and choose darkness. The people here who ignore wisdom's call, there's no fear of the Lord until it's too late. They live with their backs to God. And of course, if you reject the light, there's no alternative light, is there? It's just darkness. And if you reject wisdom, the God of wisdom, there's no alternative wisdom. There's just madness. Because they hated knowledge and did not choose the fear of the Lord. We come back to that again, don't we? Because the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. You know nothing until you turn your face to God through Jesus Christ and you come to him to be forgiven, washed clean, made new, and then that's the beginning. And then he starts to teach you what wisdom really is. But that's not how that ends. It's a verse 33. If you hear wisdom's voice, we could say if you hear the voice of Jesus, the one who is himself wisdom, if you listen to God's word, if you take it to heart, if you fear the Lord, the outcome then is so very, very different. Verse 33, but whoever listens to me will dwell secure, will be at ease without dread of disaster. You'll feel secure, you'll have the calm of sins forgiven, peace with God, at ease, knowing that whatever happens, it'll all work together for your good and for his glory. So I suppose, just looking at chapter 1, there are two things to take to heart, really, aren't there? And they're very, very simple, really. And that is, know yourself. If you know yourself, then you'll be very aware of just the madness that's inside. And you won't take the first step. Because when you take the first step, it's much easier to take the second step and the third step and so on and so on. And then you'll be carried much further than ever you thought you would. So know yourself. And the second thing is, know the Lord. And if you know the Lord, then wisdom's voice is not unwelcome. It's beautiful. It's harmonious. It's the cool breeze. It's the warming sun. It's the lovely song. It's the embrace of home. It's a lovely meal. It's everything that I would want in hearing wisdom's voice and fearing the Lord. Maybe something to do sometime in this coming week. It's not homework, but you might find it interesting. When I was preparing this, I did initially sort of draw up a table in which I had wisdom on one side and folly on the other side. And you can compare the two as you go through. But it got very complicated. Not complicated as a thing, but not very complicated to put on a board. So I thought, I won't do that. But maybe just draw up two columns, just using chapter 1. And put wisdom on top of one, folly on top of the other, and just put down what wisdom looks like from chapter 1, and put down what folly looks like from chapter 1. It's very, very helpful. There's a lot of, it's not that, it's this, it's not that, it's this. There's a lot of, they parallel each other very significantly. But as they do that, it's very helpful to see then exposing in your own heart where the folly lies, where I'm being a fool, where I'm being a madman. And where I need to really listen and learn and fear the Lord.